So on the second half of our podcast, we're going to focus on the sci-fi that kind of got us interested in our topic. So we're going to do kind of like a back and forth about where we got our ideas from and like how they inspired us for the characters and the animals and the terrain or the planet itself. So for starters, when we were introduced to Star Trek in our sci-fi and American history class, it kind of gave me the idea to have scanners. All the main characters always use scanners to check for, you know, life or anything like that. And I thought it'd be interesting to see what they would do with their scanners, even though their enemies, per se, are harder to track. You know, so we wanted to make them kind of stealthy, you know, so we made it so that the animal itself absorbed a lot of heat, but the planet itself was hot as well, so it's harder to see. Like, its temperature kind of matched that of the trees and the surface, so during the daytime they couldn't find it, and they could see this at night because they're, you know, warm-blooded, obviously. But that being said, the temperature is a lot higher than human beings due to their size and everything like that. So, like, just for me, I thought it would be really cool if they were just like these, like, yeah, black shadowy monsters that kind of were able to be ghosts at night and ghosts during the day. You know, if a crew member, you know, were to happen into the woods, what would happen to him? Would he be able to see the monster before he was eaten, or would he be, you know, totally oblivious to it and meet a grisly demise? But all that kind of comes from, you know, shows like Star Trek, where the monsters sometimes aren't able to be found, and the enemy is known, but you don't know where it is, you don't know where it's coming from. So, like, that's just me, but I was like, you know, obviously my partner has different ideas, and, you know, he's gonna tell him, he's gonna share with you his ideas.
Okay, so basically half of what's happening is that, you know,
as he said before, like everyone as in Star Trek has scanners, but what it really spoke out to me about science fiction is that literally at any given time, science fiction can become true. Because you've seen that a lot of things that in science fiction, it will like literally come true, and you really don't know that like it's coming true. Like, for example, on Star Trek, you probably can, in some years, probably, like, get a time where, like, these, like, time travel. You never know. But also, you have, let's see. That's really it.
And building up the technology advancements, we've also incorporated, like, let's be travel time. Star Trek, they have warp technology, which allows them to fly through, like, space channels a lot faster than commercial launches at the time. Now, though this is supposed to be said in the near future, I just wanted to put in something where they were a little more advanced than us. You know, even though, obviously, the issues they face are inevitable, and, you know, they're being forced to leave the planet, they still have their technology that is a little farther and faster than us. So a big inspiration for what we call it, the light lens, is that if you watch Star Trek, the way the Enterprise flies through the space channels looks like there's little light arrows flying past and floating there. That's called the light lens, because it's part of those arrows. It's traveling so fast that it sits right in with that topic. And speaking of going back to the scanners, I think that they're kind of like brain goggles. When they first got brain goggles, it's like, wow, what we can do, we can find these big bodies. But now, as technology is digitized and able to find life forms. So again, I thought that was really cool. But it's also cool to think that even with all the technology says, you know, it doesn't do anything for us. Like, for whatever reason, the planet itself is resistant to that technology. So it's resistant to possibly global warming. It's fighting the human influence. It's not going to be shaped by man. It's going to be something new, you know, it's his own thing. It can't be conquered by human beings. from what we've seen so far. And it's almost like we drew a lot of inspiration from like the way that the animal moves from stealth technology used in like fighter bombers, because of the way that their panels are, they're hard to be hit with the scanner because it looks like they're part of the cloud. It reflects the beams behind. So by having that higher heat signature, it's like it's reflecting the scanner back on itself. It's indistinguishable from its surroundings. Even if it's moving, it looks like it's just a heat pattern. So it was another inspiration, also drawn from Star Trek, and the fact that the Klingons have that stuff technology that allows them to kind of blend in with the space and just pop out and attack people. So in a way, Star Trek was a really big inspiration because it just provided that catalyst for us to look at how technology and organics could be mixed, you know, and in a way that's not like the board, which we saw in one of our classes, where it's assimilation is used for combat. It's used not to make a better society, but just for survival. You know, the evolutions of the creatures is just out of, you know, pure need. Whereas the creatures from like, or the technology from Star Trek is more for exploration and prosperity and also warfare. But the technology used by the humans in that story is just for survival. They're not looking for a better, they're not looking for aliens, they're just looking for a better home and a fresh start. And I thought that was kind of interesting that I kind of just opposed it instead of where, you know, humans have to use technology for the betterment, they use normal necessity, you know, it's obviously to be better for them, but at the end, is it really going to serve them? If technology really does not use, because humans now rely on technology, like my partner and I are going to do this on our laptop. We can't do this project without our laptop or our cell phone. And we're using it like it's nothing, but on the planet that we created, our technology would mean nothing. It would just be a hunk of metal. There's no Wi-Fi, hunk of Wi-Fi. You know, it relies on interstellar connections, which are going to be interfered with. As I said, they lost connection when they came down to the surface. Nothing is going the way they hope it will. Technology has failed them. Unlike an earthquake, technology was so great that led to the end of it. You know, one could also say that, yeah, it was horrible because it brought them to the brink of destruction, but it was also allow them to be dominant, which isn't the case. So do you think that technology is going to continue to persevere in the long term? Do you think this is going to be a potential downfall?
I think that it will be the downfall of humans, because I feel like the technology is okay, it's good, but nowadays, humans dwell on technology, which I feel like it shouldn't be the case, because I feel like we should go back to having, like, you know, conversations with, like, others, or maybe we can just like, all of us just, like, oh, put our cell phones down and just actually, like, talk to people in it and, like, actually interact with others. Because a lot of people's social skills are not there because they need a cell phone for social media. Like, they need social media, or they need this, or they need that, and they can't, like, and they can't talk for themselves.
And more than that, I also think that they're going to just dependency on it. You know, they don't even have to think about it. They lack the essential skills to survive. The weapon that one of the characters uses, he doesn't even know, he relies on it for survival. And even then, it gets dirty so quickly, and he has to clean it every day. And even though he's able to get it to work, how long is it going to get? Is it going to be something that he can rely on? I don't think so. Well, I don't really know. You know, the story is still long, I'm not going to spoil it for everybody, but I really think that the technology used in our podcast just kind of shows how people are dependent on it. And we wanted to just show sci-fi, you know, technology is so great. Or certain sci-fi. Now, you know, modern or not, I believe it went, but talking about just interstellar travel.
to expand the scope of human development, but here, I honestly feel like it's the biggest, or one of the biggest enemies, because they end up with double that. But I'm going to switch topics to what kind of inspired us, and one of the biggest things was
Avatar. Yes.
Due to, you know, the organic learning where the planet is. The way I thought about it was the intelligence of the animals kind of reminded me of the Navi, which are the plant-like humanoid creatures on the planet that they live on. They are intelligent and able to act. Again, they have the technology that the humans have, but they're able to learn over them. So I thought it would be cool to incorporate non-humanoid intelligent species, which would ultimately just dominate the humans. And I think that as inspiration, it's a pretty solid one. You know, it really showed how things aren't like what they seem. You know, these animals are highly intelligent, but the way they thought about it was just savages. These things that we can find for truly wasn't the case. So we wanted to really put it into our own podcast and use the idea of an incomparable species of animals and show how, like, they don't even have to be human or they don't even have to be able to talk. For them to be able to just be powerful. And unlike the humans, they're in tune with their environment. The people who come, the crew, when they land, they don't know anything about the environment, how harsh it is, they don't know about the air, or the obsidian spines that stick out of the crust. Or even at the indigenous site, they think that they're just not coming from the crust, which isn't the case.
Yes, and also, we're basically giving the animals a voice without giving them a voice. So basically, like, showing that, like, animals there and animals here, they are, like, animals are smart because literally they can just, like, see their surroundings. Just like humans can just think about, oh, we're in danger. That's why you have some animals that as soon as they get in danger, they know what to do as they're in danger. As in, for example, a tiger, he just, like, literally, a tiger, as they seem like they're in fear, they will attack, or maybe they will, like, run away,
they see the human not as really a threat, they see him as prey, which I thought was, again, where they see these things in that territory, and they actually think to themselves, well, this is going to be easy for them, this is going to be. So in human conquest, this is going to be a conquering. So also, they do see the humans as just a thing. Like, they're just a food source. They're not truly, you know, something to be worried of. But they also kind of speak about the vulnerability of animals, especially from humans. So we want to just show how that does not have to be that easy. They had the intelligence we had, what would they do with it? How would they use the plants that they're managed? How would they use their intelligence and their natural abilities to overcome the conflict, the hardships that they're going to face as the indigenous species? And you can see that in how they are constantly watching to see what they're doing and developing their own strategies and how to infiltrate and prosper despite the technology there. And I think that's kind of what humans did to animals. You know, how we adapted to our environment and used the tools that we had to conquer. And I just thought it'd be interesting to show how if they had what we have, what would be the case? And also, we want to talk about conservation and how animals are pushed to the brink and how they're going to push, how they may push the crew to the brink. But also, we want to talk about colonial endeavors and the consequences of those. So, you had something you want to say about that, right?
Yes, also, as to piggyback of what he said, talk about because how the animals, if they had the technology that we had, they would probably be more far in the world than we will be, because anything with man is probably going to it's probably going to be like not as good as we would say, because with man, they try to like, you know, try to take over anything that they just want, and animals are a representation of it. And that's the reason why like a lot of animals are going extinct, just because of some effect, just because of a man, or a man slash woman, if you would like to say.
So building on that, we also want to talk about building on that reason how people come to explore territories. So like an avatar, they come to explore a natural because they have really nothing to use for. It's also about production and everything. We're not so overwhelming things, but and then they come to explore their environment for the first time. They come to try to terraform it, if you will, and make it more like their own home. And they're swiftly met with resistance from the first encounter. You know, he's taking soil samples and he realizes that you can't grow anything here because of the way the soil is. It's so rich and mineral, but at the same time, it's full of this obsidian, this black, this blackness from the inside of the core, you know, of the planet. It's literally shooting through it. It's posing this constant fighting. It's posing a constant threat, really. It's just a planet full of hardships, and they also have to have a place to just a territory where they can be dominant, which really isn't going to happen. It's about that avatar where whenever they leave the safety of their base, they're picked off by either the natives or the just the wildlife in general, because they're just superior to them and know their environment. And touching back on the exploitation of areas by humans, we wanted to draw from historical sources like the exploitation of Africa and Southeast Asia. So we wanted to talk about how they were exploiting natural resources and how those have run out, and now we need natural resources. Now the dominant people needed natural resources, and they don't have them anymore. And the only natural resources available require intensive attention. They need to be brought into the camp and messed with and molded to the environment that best suits us, which really reflects the notions of, again, superiority and of superiority and dominance. Just how when the colonists went to Africa, they just assumed it's all going to work out. Although the environment and the indigenous people did fight back, it wasn't effective enough. So that's another thing we want to incorporate. This environment will fight back, and it will win if you don't try your hardest. Given that, we also wanted to show how the humans are also going to develop along the way. They're going to encounter these challenges, and if they're able to adapt and become more like the indigenous creatures, are they going to be brutal and capable of overcoming the challenges faced by them? Are they going to be able to take the soil and keep the mineral that's stripped out of the base of the glass? The very thing that's fighting them, the point, are they going to be able to achieve it to their own needs? Are they going to be able to overcome it, like their other challenges in life? Or are they just going to face their own annihilation? Will they be able to eat the food then, or will that poison them? You know, and I thought that was interesting to just analyze how humans have the ability and the adaptability to just mold ourselves to the environment, but now in an environment that doesn't need to be, that's going to resist them, will not be easy to mold to. The air itself burns to breathe a little bit. It's hot. It's a little bit bitter. And even though they've been breathing circulated air, this air is fresher. It still has a harsh quality to it. The thing that they need for life the most, which is air, they can't survive more than 3 minutes without it. Even that's changing. So what are they going to do to grow out of this, to become a more effective people? Are they going to become more like the animals there, or are they going to keep their human traits and see how that works out for them? Honestly, I think they're going to be forced to, in the end, adapt and become a more efficient human being, a person who may not need civilization as much. Maybe they'll rely more on the strategy of the strong survivor, who
intelligence to outwit, overcome these animals. Maybe with technology, or maybe with physical adaptation, maybe their lungs will get bigger and their muscle tone will get better, and they'll become more resistant to whatever weather changes and illnesses they may face, or maybe they'll just be annihilated. So,
question: Do you think that the humans can come over to a different country and colonize that animals that they know that are just like a teeny bit smarter than they are, or do you think that the animals will eventually erase them off of?
I honestly think that on the planet that they're on, in the new environment, if they don't adapt quick enough and use their past experiences to overcome it, I think they'll be annihilated. I think that this new planet represents what historically Africa could have been. We also need to bring that in, that we keep tying into ideas of colonialism and how indigenous peoples, if they had fought back, could have held colonialism and colonial exploitation. So on the same lines, I think that if these space colonists can't change their ways and are pushed to the brink of annihilation and are forced to leave, then yes, they will die. But if they're able to change their ways and change the way they think and behave, then maybe they'll start surviving. That doesn't necessarily mean being too aggressive. It can actually mean working in cohesion with the environment. You know, instead of fighting back, they can accept it for what it is and allow themselves to become a part of it, not part, you know, instead of being a group of individuals, they can be a part of their environment a little bit better.
Yeah. So do you think the humans should use the same techniques they use in order to colonize, like, as Africa or something else different than here, or do you think it should be the same, or should it be different?
Not at all. I think they should develop a whole new way of looking at the situation, because it's not the same. They're not the technology. Although they're technology doesn't work. It's failing them. So they can't use the same methods. They are no longer the superior military force and the superior culture. They're undoubtedly inferior in every way. Now, do they have substantial intelligence? Yes, but the species has already developed ways to circumvent their technology and maybe even lure them out. You know, it's biding its time. It's waiting to see what it will do. It's observing. And as they grow, I'm sure the environment will grow with them. So I think they have to adapt to their environment and not try to mold it anymore. They have to embrace it. But we're going to switch topics again and start talking about another inspiration of ours, which would be Alien. One of the main characters talked about being killed by a xenomorph. You know, he talked about the facehugger. And the full-grown facehugger would be a xenomorph. It would be the black alien with no eyes and the mouth that shot out of his other mouth and a long tail. And I thought that was just interesting to see how they kind of scoffed at alien intelligence. Like, it wasn't possible. We're not going to get up. There's nothing that can kill us. And how wrong they were. There's obviously something there, whether it be resembling a cat or a bear or a space gorilla. It is a true threat. It has the capability of pushing these people off its planet and just devouring them. And let's just say that these colonists can't survive until, you know, the next 2 years, or the next actually 12 years, when it's possible for the colonists, for new humans to come and they have a settlement built. What happens to them? What happens to those humans when they arrive? Will more of these indigenous monsters come? And are they truly a match for the xenomorph, so to speak? The way that they are aggressive and the ultimate predator, unstoppable. Are these monsters on Black Star the same type of deal? Will they pose the same threat that the xenomorph face? I think that's interesting to look at. Now I have a question for you. Do you think that they appreciate the true power of what they're facing? Do you think that they realize it yet? Or do you think that they're still going to have to face more death danger?
I really don't think they realize it yet, because they probably feel like, oh, it's probably not as bad as they would say, because knowing coming from like a military background and coming from the United States, where like everyone knows us from, but being like having a good military,
So people look at us and be like, oh, you know, they're bound to like, you know, come through and just take everything over. So I feel so now. Yeah, so I feel like they don't like, you know, they don't really respect them as much. But then, you know, shortly later that I see that these animals are not like, they're different. And they actually going like, if you don't respect them, they will come and they will kill all of you.
Right. And I think they're totally right about that, how they don't really truly appreciate the power that they're facing. But I also think that, as you're saying, they have their own ideas about who they were and who they used to be. And another thing I want to talk about was how they saw the environment. When Abel said, I want to use Sidian as a weapon, his King's response was swift. He said, no, are we going to bring warfare here too? Showing that they are changing in the way of their branching away from warfare, and maybe that they're seeing the error of their ways. But, you know, there's still those lingering thoughts of, you know, well, this is the best way. War is the best way. So I think that in the future, we'll see a growth, or hopefully we'll see growth in the characters towards a more coexistence-based ideas of what, you know, man's relationship with his environment should be. But we also have to consider the fact that maybe these animals don't want to coexist. Maybe they want to eat us, you know, maybe they want an easy snack, you know? So,
I mean, as you pointed out, they might not be able to want to coexist with us, but anything that, like, literally, as you be with them for a long period of time, you actually start to know their patterns, and then you can actually, if y'all can coexist, like, you know, as Caucasian people never wanted the black people to come over. So, with it, as time went on, there were, like, more laws to effect that actually made them, like, that actually made them actually have us to be around. So I feel like it will kind of be like the same way. So it's like, but as time goes on, I feel like they were like get more adapted to one another.
Well, since you bring up the topic of race, I do think that could be a valid point, but in America you can still see the fact that races still don't truly coexist, not truly mixed. So it could be a similar situation, but the real question is, who will be the dominant species? Will we be coexisting with them, or will they be coexisting with us? Who will be superior, them or us? Will they have the power?
I feel like animals will be existing, because at the end of the day, it's their land, and at any time they can just wipe them out if they truly wanted to. But then you just got to think, like, the country, like, you probably need more people in order to get more things done, like, trying to save it, because you work together trying to save it, then you probably have a better chance of saving the country than y'all just separate apart, y'all fighting, and nothing is getting done. Like, y'all worrying about, like, a pride and ego.
So do you think that in the future, that the animals will just allow them to live, or do you think it'll be more of a, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, you know? They may not be the prey anymore, but they may still have to provide some sort of tribute, you know? Maybe they, you know, have to keep the environment clean, or maybe they provide some better food source, something that's more nutritious, but it's not a human being, but it's, you know, maybe it's grown from the human environment. Maybe they have cattle or something
I feel like it's going to be like, at least say both people benefit, so mutualism. So both, I feel like both parties are going to benefit. One, because the humans are coming in order to like better life, since most of their countries do not exist anymore. And also the people that are already there, they can actually get more people in time. So yes, this is our first episode of our podcast, and we have another episode coming soon.
Thank you.